We're going to look at the tonight's story with, from a different case and a different perspective in a moment with Christy Smith. She'll be next on Coast to Coast AM. In 1988, Christy Smith took an interest in search and rescue and has volunteered countless hours every year since. During Christy's years of involvement with search and rescue, she has responded to numerous searches that resulted in many finds. Christy began her career with the Kentucky Search Dog Association and continued her association with that organization for many years after moving to Arizona. Christy was instrumental in the formation of the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office Mark 9 Unit and Arizona Search Track and Rescue, Inc., and has served in a number of capacities with both organizations. In addition to her role as a canine handler, Christy helps promote the education of search and rescue volunteers throughout the state. She is with us this half hour. Hi, Christy. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Good. What kind of dogs do you use most of the time?
My personal dogs are Belgians and a bloodhound.
Ah, and in most search and rescue, what do they use?
You know, it varies. Every organization is a little bit different. Labs, German Shepherds, Golden Retrievers are pretty common. Malinois, mostly working and sporting breeds.
How long does it take to train a dog like that?
It can take approximately 2,000 hours each year. It takes about 2 years to get them to an operational status.
2,000 hours?
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of work, Christy. Now, what are the things? How do you train a dog like that?
Well, we teach them a game of hide and seek. They're taught to seek out human scent.
And then tell me a little bit now about that. How does that work?
Well, we like to start off with puppies when they're really bonded to the owners, and we basically hold the owner or hold the dog while the owner runs off and hides from the dog. And we progress the dog's training to make it more and more difficult and teach them to problem solve, to find the human scent.
Now, in the search of a missing person, mm-hmm. what do you do with an established dog that's trained to look for missing people?
It really depends. We have some that are scent discriminatory, and meaning they look for a specific individual. We provide them with a scent article and ask them to locate that particular person. We also use dogs that will find any human scent. So in a big wilderness area, they're really used quite a bit, where we just have them go find any human scent in the area if we don't have a scent article.
Now, when these animals have they found actually like a body or something?
Yes.
They do. And what do they do? Like, how close do they get? Do they just freeze? What happens?
Well, all the dogs are a little bit different. The first time a search dog generally finds an entire body, because we train them on minute particles for deceased individuals. Some of them are very cautious in how they approach. My personal dogs have gone all the way in, sniff them. Sometimes they nuzzle them a little bit, and then they return to me.
And do they bring you back?
Yes, they alert that they located somebody, and they take me back in.
Amazing. Amazing. And are they, like, barking and yelping and everything?
Everybody's alert's a little different. I have a couple that jump on me. One barks. One will actually grab my clothing.
And pull you?
And pull, yeah.
That's remarkable. The tool, what's the accuracy rate of a dog finding someone? If they're out in the area somewhere.
Well, if you get them in the right area and they are properly trained, statistically-wise, in the United States, they're about 89 to 93%. I strive for much higher levels percentage-wise with my dogs, and I think everybody does, but they can have off days just like people can.
So you're in Arizona now?
I am.
And do you go around the country or do you just stay in the state?
Predominantly statewide, but we do go into other states if we're requested.
All right, Jerry, the tie-in of canines with the psychics is an interesting combination. How and why?
Well, in some cases where the police departments, especially in an adult case, can't or won't get involved, it sort of left a void at the end of an investigation where the person is still missing. The police, because the person is an adult, won't take the investigation any further. This way, we can offer that service, and if the person is in a general vicinity that we've identified, then we can go to that area and use the canine professionals to see if we can locate the person.
Christy, have you ever lost a dog in the action here?
No.
Okay, so they always come back.
They always come back.
What do most, I mean, do you work with law enforcement also? I mean, do they have their own canines? They do, don't they? I've seen them. They have the canine patrol car, and they've got their dog, their German Shepherd, in most cases. Do most departments have a dog?
Most departments have patrol dogs. Some have arson dogs as well as drug and bomb dogs. There are some of the bigger ones do have some dogs that they can do trailing work or do some type of air scent with. That's not the dog, the primary focus of a police department, however. So the ones that team up with search and rescue organizations are generally the ones that have search and rescue dogs available to them.
Every once in a while, when I'm in an airport, you know, you walk past a canine dog, and you look at him and you go, hey, I'm clean. Don't look at me that way. You know, and off you go. How are they sometimes wrong? And if, and I don't mean searching for a body, let's say in a drug case or something like that. Are they sometimes wrong and they screw up a case or something like that?
If they're properly trained, you shouldn't have that issue. The problem is they can't communicate with us. So it's us as humans having to train them properly.
You know, our program, Kelly, deals with a lot of different things. Uh-oh, whose phone is that? Is that you, Kelly?
Hopefully not. I don't think so.
Okay. All right. Christy, you still with us?
I'm still with you.
Somebody's scratching there. But Kelly and Christy, we deal with everything. I mean, the seriousness of what we're doing and also the seriousness of strange investigations, let's say like for Bigfoot. I had a call last week, Christy. Someone said, can a dog actually go out into the wilderness and find Bigfoot? Because humans don't seem to be able to. Is that possible?
It would be possible. If we had a scent article, it would make it much easier for the dog.
Have you ever been asked for something like that, Kelly?
No, we haven't, and hopefully we won't get any requests like that.
Oh, no, believe it or not, I think that's a great investigation as well, even though I know you're dedicated to the very seriousness of what you do. That one's science.
Well, yeah, I mean, it would be nice to be, the one that located Bigfoot, but, we got so many other important issues at hand that... It's just not on the top of my hit parade at this point.
I understand. How many trained dogs are there in the country? Do we know?
I personally have no idea. I mean, like Christy was saying, almost every police department has a dog for various purposes. But you'll also find that in each and every state, there are the volunteer organizations like Christy's that try to augment or complement police departments and giving them additional dogs to assist in a search.
What about individuals, Christy, that just want to have a dog like this that is well trained? Do you recommend that?
I'm sorry?
What about individuals who have the need to want to have a trained dog like what you have?
Uh-huh.
Do you recommend that?
Well, yeah, if they have the time to do the training properly.
I mean, are there companies that will train a dog like that?
We're starting to see some out there. The problem with that is if the individual is not training the dog, they're not going to read and or readily interpret the subtleties of some of the things that the dogs can tell you, especially if they're hot and tired. If you work them for 10 to 15 hours and, you know, giving them breaks in there, they still may not give you a really visible indication that they're getting into some scent. And if you're not trained in what to look for in your particular dog, you might miss that.
What's the farthest an animal, a dog, has gone in search for something that you know of?
I can only tell you my own personal experience. One of my dogs, with all conditions, just absolutely perfect, relatively flat terrain, not a lot to interrupt the airflow, a slight breeze, a little bit, tiny bit of rain, three-quarter of a mile, running out, doing recalls back and forth between me and the subject.
And back they come.
Yep. And he continually looped until I got to the subject.
That is an amazing,
and it was
amazing
three-quarters of a mile.
And I am sure in some cases, maybe not with you, Christy, but departments have lost the dog in the line of duty.
Absolutely. It can happen to anybody, even a search dog.
Yeah. And, you know, the handler gets pretty close to the animal.
Well, in search and rescue, at least with my organization, these are our personal dogs. They're not a unit dog. These are my personal dogs.
They're like family for you.
Absolutely. They are sleeping on the floor right now next to me.
Waiting for their next assignment.
Well, actually, one's on the couch. But
what is their next assignment? Do you know?
Oh, well, it varies. Tomorrow night, we have a thing that we're doing over in Scottsdale, a book signing. So two of them will go to that.
They sign books?
No, actually, Kelly's signing. They just...
You never know if you got them that well-trained.
Well, they'd probably give you a paw.
That paw print, that would be cute. how are they with children?
Great. They have to be totally non-aggressive to all individuals, whether it be the elderly, young children. Not jump on them. They have to be, you know, very well-trained and obedient dogs.
Michael Vick today pleads guilty to conspiracy and the dogfighting charges, and I don't even have to ask you your reaction to that. I already know.
Yeah.
Amazing. Amazing, amazing, amazing. Kelly, when you put this team together then, and you all go out and do what you need to do, the total results, the psychics, the astrologer, the canine researcher, put together as a package, results in a hit rate of about what percent?
Well, here locally in Arizona, which is where we've actually put the complete package together, we're at about 40%. Unfortunately, most of our cases aren't in Arizona. I mean, they're all over the country, so we don't get the opportunity to go to these places when we know that we could be of great assistance to these police officers and families. But it's a money issue and a time issue, so... we're hoping to change that so we are a little bit more accessible, but you know, we're evolving. We're trying to do the best we can with the tools that we have.
When do you bring the dogs in, Kelly, into this kind of work? I mean, you've got the psychics doing what they do. At what point do you bring the dogs in? I mean, is it a package, or do some work without the other?
Well, it's a package that we offer to the authorities and to the families, but again, it sort of depends on... you know, where this case is at. And
I mean, would you have the dogs working simultaneously while the psychics are doing what they're doing?
No, because we need to wait for their information to try to zero in on a specific area that we would need to search.
Okay.
And,
okay.
This last weekend, Christy and I and quite a few of her team went to a specific area in Arizona looking for a missing man, and we didn't find him, but we did eliminate that area where his wallet was found, and so at least we have eliminated an area that we're 98% convinced he's not in that area.
So the canines really are the closer of the case.
Exactly. I mean, you know, there is areas that you can go into beyond what our group does, private investigators, for example, but essentially it does close the circle when a person is missing, and you can use the dogs to at least bring some kind of closure as to a place, eliminate a place, or find the individual in that area.
Christy, weather, does that play a factor?
It can. Obviously, sunlight and heat destroy scent, so that can make things a lot more difficult for the dog. Having a slight breeze is very helpful, along with temperatures that are below 85 degrees, which we don't see very often during the 4 months of summer here in Arizona. So we work a lot at nighttime.
Do they seem to know what their job is the moment you let them out to do what they do?
Oh, absolutely. They know when we start getting our gear out at home and we're loading to go, they start going nuts. They're pretty antsy. The minute they hear their particular working collar, they're barking and carrying on, ready to get out and do what they've been trained to do.
Do they even have a sense of whether they're looking for an adult or a child? I mean, do they have that ability to distinguish that?
I think if we give them scent articles, they most definitely do. Our adrenaline changes The handler's adrenaline changes depending on the urgency. Obviously, with children and older people, there's a higher urgency in conducting searches, and I think the dogs pick up on that. Do they absolutely know that it's a child versus, you know, a regular adult? I'm not sure. They just feel the difference in our adrenaline.
You know, your dogs are probably so well-trained scent-wise, I bet, because medical doctors are now beginning to think that some animals, some dogs, have the ability to detect if people have cancer or not. I wonder if yours would be able to do that.
If they were trained to seek out that odor,
yeah,
I would believe so. Any dog has the capability. It's a matter of proper training.
And again, you say work with them from up. Can you take an adult dog that has never been trained and turn them into one of these kinds of canines?
Yes. We have taken dogs as old as 6 years old. The biggest drawback to that is it takes about 2 years to get them to an operational status. So if you start with a six-year-old dog, he's eight. Depending on the breed of dog, you may not have a very long of a working time for the dog.
And I was going to say, what makes one dog better than another in terms of breed?
I don't know that it's necessarily breed. It has to do with the dog's drives. Working dogs need to have some tremendous drives because they have to want to do it. No matter what, they have to want to do it if temperatures are extreme, if they're tired. There's a lot of things that have to motivate the dog. So the higher the dog's working drives are, the more successful they're going to be.
It makes it easier on you.
Absolutely.
Jerry, the work that your team does, in case there's some law enforcement out there right now that have never heard of you until this moment, how do they get a hold of you?
Well, the best way to get a hold of our group is through either Christy's website or mine. And
which we've got linked up
exactly.
On ours. Okay, so it's there for everybody.
And either by going on Christy's website or mine, you have access to hers and also in her website. My website's available, so either way.
Christy, what's it cost to train a dog like this if somebody just wants it done?
Oh, goodness. You mean for a trainer to train the dog for somebody?
Yeah, for like 2,000 hours worth, you said.
Oh, my goodness. You'd probably be looking at an excess of $15,000, I would guess. It's just not something that I do, even as a professional trainer. I train the handler to train the dog.
And you'd recommend, though, that the departments just merely tap into your services instead of just trying to do this all themselves?
Absolutely. Or if they have a handler that they are wanting to train to do specifically search versus some of the other stuff, they can certainly contact us and we would help them.
All right. Well, Christy's website's linked up at coasttocoastam.com as Jerry Kelly Snyder's websites have been. Jerry, I'm going to keep you for a half hour of phone calls, okay?
Very good.
And Christy, thank you for being on the program.
Oh, you're welcome.
And good luck with your search. And I tell you, it is indeed a dog is man's best friend. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We will open up the phone lines now. We'll keep Jerry Kelly Snyder. You can call him Jerry or Kelly. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to take this final half hour. We'll take your phone calls with our guest, Kelly Snyder, as we talk about his group of psychics and astrologers and canine researchers and rescue folks and dogs, of course. That's all next on Coast to Coast AM. Kelly, I see no reason why law enforcement wouldn't just use more of these services on almost every case. Why would they hold back?
Well, I think it's to some degree it's a matter of egos. I mean, a police officer who's worth his weight thinks that he can solve and resolve anything. It's just the more progressive officer that reaches out for every tool available, and this is exactly that. It's just another investigative tool. It's not to say they can get a search warrant behind our information or you know, take it into court with our information. That process is basically up to their investigative abilities, but you know, use us simply for the reason to complement and augment what you're already doing.
I have a strong suspicion that the Zodiac Killer might still be alive out here in California. If you were assigned that to put together the psychics, possible you might be able to crack that case?
Well, certainly the possibility is there. ironically, today in an email, partially because of the publicity from, you know, your radio show, I did get a email from an individual asking if we would look into that case.
Now, was this just some a listener, or was it law enforcement?
It was one of your listeners. It wasn't law enforcement, just more of a curiosity question as to why would we not get involved in that.
Yeah.
And quite simply, it's a matter of there's thousands of cases we can get involved in, but we do prefer to be requested and brought into a case.
The question is, how do we know that didn't come from the Zodiac Killer?
Well, if it did, I have their email address, so maybe that would be something for law enforcement.
There you go. Let's take some calls. We'll go east of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hello there.
Hi. Good evening. I was just curious, this is Cindy from Omaha, if you have a time set as far as like 5, 10, or 15 years that you go back and track on different cases, or you do current ones only?
We try to stay within the 18-month rule. The only time we will go beyond that is if it is a personal request from law enforcement. If it's a situation where a case is really old and nobody is interested in it except the family for obvious reasons, and we have some downtime and we're not sitting with 5 or 6 cases waiting to be worked on, then I present that to the group. Usually on a voluntary basis to where they can work it, you know, while we have some downtime. But we do try to stay within that 18-month rule, like I say, unless law enforcement requests our help.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right, thanks. First-time caller line, where are you calling from? Hi there.
Hi, this is Chris. I'm from Peoria, Illinois.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for calling.
Great. George, I got to tell you, the work I'm in, we're out late at night a lot of times, and you keep us company on the road.
I love it. Thanks.
All right. Well, I have a question for Kelly. My grandmother seemed to have some type of psychic connection with her dog when she was alive, and there were weird exchanges between the two of them. I was wondering, Kelly, if you thought there was some type of psychic connection or psychic ability on the part of the dog as they are involved in these search and rescue missions as well.
Well, I don't think that there is. I don't know the answer to that for sure. I think it's just their incredible ability to have this sixth sense, or you know, this you know, their noses obviously are 100 times better than what we have. So it's a combination of their instinct as to what they're looking for, and then their incredible noses. So sorry, I really didn't have a good answer for your grandmother and her dog, but you know, from a generic standpoint, I think that is the basic answer.
Great.
Did you ever think, when you were in the DEA, Kelly, that you'd be doing this?
No, I really had no clue. I mean, obviously, I wanted to work with children. And that's why I joined Big Brothers, Big Sisters here locally, and then later on, the National Center for Missing Children. But no clue. There was no way I could have anticipated this, especially working with psychics. But thank goodness that I had an open mind and didn't rule this out.
Big Brother is a great organization, but every time I hear the name, I think of some huge government peering down on us.
Well, in this case, my little brother is now 6'6", 245 pounds, so he's not like a little brother anymore.
How old?
He's 16.
16 years old. 16 years old?
Yeah.
My gosh. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hello. Yeah. This is Shane from New Orleans.
Okay, Shane.
Kelly, George, I hope my greetings find us all well tonight. Quick intro. I'm thankful for my gift from my mother, Barbara, and it seems my intuitions actually complete my mother's spectrum of missing powers. And my knack is for finding other people's lost belongings. I've never tried to tackle such personal things as a past spirit or human body, and also I have no any power to find my own lost belongings. So what I quickly do is I find lost things by asking the person that saw the item last to concentrate on their possession of it before they lost it. So, Kelly, do you have a book or some quick advice of any tools or methods to sharpen our intuitions, specifically for finding other people's belongings?
Well, not specifically for belongings. Obviously, our group is you know, concentrating on the missing, you know, individuals. But Sunny, who was just on, if you were listening to her, she does have a class that she teaches to enhance the psychic ability. So in her chapter in the book that we wrote last year, you know, she does cover a little bit of that. And essentially, it's just using your own abilities and continual practice is, you know, somewhat of a generic answer to your question. But essentially, there are books out there, and I could put you in contact with Sunny later on if that's what you desire through my website. So you can work on that.
Like, is the book and you guys' website, you know, linked to Coast to Coast Home?
Just for this show, it is. It's not on a regular basis, but for this show, it was linked, yes.
Okay. Well, thanks, guys. Have a very good night.
Okay, thank you. Next up, let's go east of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah.
My name is Julie, and I'm from Michigan, and that's my cousin Jerry.
Oh, is it really?
I just happened to turn Coast to Coast on, and I just heard you say, this is Jerry Kelly Snyder from Arizona. And I thought, oh, my gosh, I got to try to call. We're proud of you, Jerry. Aunt Liz is listening, and keep up the good work.
Oh, thank you very much. Nice talking to you again.
Good talking to you, sweetie. Bye-bye.
Alrighty.
It is a small world, Jerry.
Yeah, what a shocker there.
Can you tell us what cases are coming up? I mean, and how far in advance do you get this call? And you have to start working.
Well, as far as getting the call, I mean, it runs the gamut. We have received phone calls in Ed Hatfield's case, for example. That case, you know, started literally 7 days after he went missing. Darren Palmer, another case, that was 3 or 4 days. And we found him literally 2 days after we got the phone call. A case we're working right now that's driving us all crazy is a missing aircraft. It's a plane that took off from Deer Valley Airport last year, September 24th, on its way to Sedona, Arizona. And, you know, it just went off radar, which is normal on approach to the airport, but it never landed at the airport and not to be seen since. And so, you know, even though that case was worked on and we are almost positive that the plane went down and it's in a valley, the rugged areas that we're looking in are inaccessible by anything except walking in or by helicopter, and you'd have to rappel in, which probably wouldn't be a good idea since there are 2,000-foot cliffs in there.
Oh, my gosh.
But that's something that we're working on, and we're not going to stop until we find the plane because it's either the vortex of Sedona or the Bermuda Triangle of Sedona, but this plane is just, you know, driving us all crazy. We've flown 168 flights between the Civil Air Patrol and private individuals and the father of this missing girl and the plane. Her name is Marcy Randolph. And, you know, and then our group got involved shortly after she went missing. So that's just one of the ones that for all of us is a mystery.
All right, let's go take a few more calls here. First time caller line, you're on the air with us. Hello there.
Hi, this is Nancy.
Hey, Nancy, go ahead.
I'm calling from Price, Utah, and my question is for Kelly, and I'm wondering if by any chance your group has discussed or have been asked what their feelings might be on whether any of our 6 miners in Crandall Canyon might still be alive.
Actually, that question came through on an email also today, and quite frankly, that is something that a group like ours could work on. Especially someone, you know, like David Campbell that can zero in through his forensic astrology. But what our group would do is based on a map provided by the miners, you know, the company, is try to determine, you know, their location, you know, based on a physical map of where they were at one point versus where they are allegedly now. And unfortunately, it's something that we didn't, you know, get invited in to work on, and
right.
And it's really not something that we would normally do, but that's not to say that we couldn't do it.
Is there any way the families, I mean, how would the families go about getting a hold of you?
Well, through the website, obviously, is the best way. That's how we handle all of our inquiries for any of the cases. So if that is something that the families want us to work on, certainly we'll look at it.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Thanks, You're Nancy. So I know some of the family members are still holding against hope that maybe, just maybe, after 2 weeks that they may still be alive. But I guess according to the co-owner of the mine today, it doesn't look good.
Yeah, I think he made the comment that they feel that it wasn't just a cave-in and they were in the general vicinity, that the cave-in actually
buried
landed
them.
On top of them, I
yeah.
guess.
Yeah. Wildcard line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, this is Jerry from Wisconsin.
Hey, Kelly,
my question is, have you been involved with the Paige Bergfeld case in Grand Junction, Colorado?
No, our group has not been brought into that, and I'm not, quite honestly, I'm not familiar with that case.
What is that case?
Paige is a mother of three who left her house at 10 o'clock on June 28th and has not been seen since. And there are several persons of interest, the three children. There's a situation with them, too, with an ex-husband of Paige's, who is the father of the children.
Is he a suspect?
Well, he's a person of interest, is all that the sheriff's department is saying.
Okay. Person of interest. You have to be called in, though, Jerry, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, the obvious reason is we need someone to report it to. So if we were to just adopt a case and then went through all of the hard work that we have to go through and then contacted the family or the authorities and they say, we don't want your information, we've essentially wasted our time. So we, you know, we require that we be requested by either a family member or the local authorities.
Who generally is the law enforcement person who makes the call to you? Is it a police chief, a detective? Who does it first?
It's in almost every single case, it's the detective that's been assigned the case.
Is he doing this on his own?
In some cases, yes. And in some cases, it's at the request of the family.
Does he, if he's doing it on his own, tell you, can you keep this between us right now?
I mean, most recently we had a case in Minnesota. And the officer asked that I not share this with anyone in the family. He didn't want us to make contact with the family. But, you know, he was, you know, good enough to at least use our information. And this individual was found.
Because of the information?
Well, I actually know. There were several agencies looking for this individual. And I supplied him with three separate reports as to where we thought this individual was located. And the very last report actually had put this individual in a specific lake just on the outskirts of town. And about 2 months after he went missing, that's where they found him.
All right, let's go to our West of the Rockies line. Hi there, you're on the air with us.
Hi, Kat from Lava Hot Springs.
Hey, Kat.
The Huntington, Utah... There's some of us that are in the paranormal field that have kind of worked on that. And we live nearby. And we're getting some answers that two of them are still alive, but they're drilling in the wrong place.
And they can't stay alive too much longer, Kat, can they?
No, but I'm not a psychic, but I pendulumized it. You know what a pendulum is?
Oh, sure do. Absolutely.
Is it a workable tool that you use?
Psychics would probably know how to use it, Kelly.
Yeah, I mean, we have actually three or four people in our group that use the pendulum, and one particular individual who's author of the book, too, Dan Baldwin, actually, that is his primary skill that he uses.
I guess what they should have done was to try to drill that 30-inch hole that they wanted to. It's going to take two more weeks to do that, and that...
Two more weeks to drill the hole?
If they drilled a 30-inch hole, which they were thinking about lowering a basket, hopefully they'd hit the right spot.
They're in the wrong place.
Yeah, by probably how far? What do you think?
Well, we get that they're off almost 1,000 feet.
Oh, my gosh. How could they be off so much, Kat?
I don't know, but we haven't worked on a map. I'm thinking about driving down there.
Well, you know what? What can you lose? You might as well.
That's true. If there's two more still alive.
You know, the big question is, you know, they basically have shut down. All search and rescue.
About three of them were killed in the first initial explosion when it went down.
Yeah.
But one was injured, but there's still two alive.
Two of the six.
I don't have names.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
I've got girls in Salt Lake City that are working on it, but we're thinking of now we better take... I don't know why they haven't called in a psychic.
Well, we don't know if they have or not. We don't, because as you said, Kelly, they don't broadcast that.
No, a lot of them don't. They just, you know, do their thing behind the scenes, you know, maybe in this case, that's what they have done.
Absolutely. Once again, your website, findmenumber2.com, correct?
Correct.
Linked up at coasttocoastam.com. The book, Find Me, where do they get it? Where do you find it?
Well, they can get it through our website, through the publisher's website, which is also on my website, amazon.com. And then just recently started showing up in Borders and Barnes & Noble.
If you ever do a case that is public, do give us a call, Kelly, because I want to be able to track it. You know, if it's already something that's going to be publicized, let's do that, all right?
I'd love to do that, yeah.
Okay, and then I've already sent an email to my friend who trains police departments to get a hold of you.
That'd be great.
Okay, thanks, Kelly. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Ross Mitchell, Alan Corbett, Stephanie Smith, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then... be safe, everyone.